Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You know, it's great that the owners' meeting, the NFL owners' meeting is in Orlando. I am here. I'm going to talk to Todd Bowles this morning, followed by Jason Light. And yes, a chance to sit down with Joel Glazer, the Bucs owner, one of the owners of the Bucs. I haven't done that in quite a while. So,
now, you mentioned it. You're glad it's in Orlando.
Yeah.
Which can you get to quicker from your house? Orlando or to the airport and flying to Arizona where the meetings have been before and getting there? Which one can you get to quicker?
Well, glad you asked. Depending on, you know, which direction you're going and what time, probably Arizona. I'm just saying, if it's nonstop on Southwest, I'm there in 3.5 hours. If it's nonstop on I-4, I'm there in 3.5 hours. This was crazy. That was nuts. That was a crazy drive. I never want to drive I-4. I drive the hoop. I don't drive I-4. So I get on this thing coming over here in the morning about, I don't know, what was it, like 10:30 maybe, 10 o'clock. And, you know, there, first of all, is there any good time to drive this death street or what, the most dangerous highway in America? I don't know that there is. But you come out of Tampa, and it's hard enough from, I'm coming from Lutz, and so I have to take 75 and, you know, hook up on I-4 and all that. So once you get on there, it is somewhere between a parking lot and a toll booth speed, right? Like you're not really going very fast. And then when I get outside of the Hard Rock or thereabouts or Donota Sass or somewhere, all of a sudden it almost comes to a stop. But the problem wasn't in our lane. We're going eastbound. Westbound, there was an accident. And brother, I felt for these people coming westbound because all three lanes were blocked. It was a three-car accident, fairly serious one. I don't know if anybody was hurt. But one of those things where, you know, you have three cars strewn across like the middle of the lanes and nobody can get through and there's no tow trucks yet. And so as I'm driving and I'm going eastbound and I kind of measured it and I looked at how far I had gone, 10 miles of parking lot back to back to back bumpers, like no one moving, like just at a dead stop, almost 10 miles of it. And I thought, oh my God, if you're trying to go westbound right now. But that's all it takes, and it takes less than that. Sometimes it can be, you know, dude has a flat tire and, you know, there's a tow truck behind him and everybody slows down on both sides. And the other thing is, I don't know, have you ever had this, do you use the Waze app? Do you know what that is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you put it on and it kind of measures where the traffic jams are, and it'll try to get you to your destination as quickly as it can. But you have to be committed to going through roads that you never knew existed, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of directionally challenged. If I don't know where the sun rose, then I don't know what direction I'm going. But like I'm on I-4 and then it takes you on this detour. And brother, you're so far away from I-4 that you think you're going the wrong direction. You're back in Tampa. Like it's nuts. And somehow through the magic of directions, you go through these neighborhoods, you're going through, you know, all kinds of places. And then you end up back on I-4 and then you get off I-4. But it was at 10:30. It took me almost just short of 3 hours to get to Orlando, and not just Orlando, but like sort of like the Disney exit, more or less, like not downtown Orlando, but just sort of on the fringe there. And it was crazy. And we weren't even in the lane or the direction where the accident occurred. So yeah, I don't like I-4. There's nothing good about it.
For those that have to drive it every day, I don't know
how
you do it.
Oh my God.
I do not know.
I don't either. I don't either. And there's people that commute, obviously, maybe whether it's from Lakeland or Orlando or, you know, parts unknown. But like, yeah, to try to get on that road in either direction, really, you know. And I get that it's the spring and there's a lot of people here and sort of tourist season and there's some spring break in different parts of the country and Canada and whatnot. But this was special even by I-4 standards. So anyway, but I made it. That was the good news. And got to see a lot of people. Got to see a lot of people in the NFL. Got to see some of our local writers who were also here. Ira. And Rock Riley. Yeah. And we saw, but you know, what's cool is like you can walk up to John Lynch and Linda and talk to them for a little while. You want to pick these names up because I got a bunch of them. So John Lynch.
Hold on.
All right, now bend over. So these are going to get heavy after a while. So John, who of course did not win a Super Bowl, we didn't talk about that, but his son Jake, who played at Stanford, is going into coaching, which I thought, wow, that's amazing. So where's he at? I'm thinking he's going to tell me, well, he's with us. No. He went to the UW. He went to University of Washington as a sort of a quality control guy, if you will, like basically a grinder, you know, mm-hmm. the low level grinder type job. And even though, you know, Shanahan, different people are like, well, you know, you can bring him here if you want. Jake said, no, I kind of want to do this on my own.
So he, just like the Niners, he didn't win.
Oh, ouch.
Too soon?
A little bit. Yeah. I didn't even go there with John. I didn't want to say,
no,
hey,
you
man,
came there with John.
I know. Well, okay. Yeah. Maybe for Jake. Yeah, they did. You're right. Almost one type deal. But they got a new coach now, obviously, and who knows what they'll do from here on out, but they obviously lost their best quarterback and all that. So I thought that was cool. Jake, of course, went to Stanford like his dad and has followed in his footsteps in a lot of ways, but he wants to be his own man, which I thought was neat. Let's see. Who else did we see? Steve Young, just to drop a name, mm-hmm. Who was here making a presentation for flag football, girls flag football. His two daughters play, and Steve coached this year. And he said he kind of rediscovered like just the purity and the love for the game. And of course, Darcy Glazer Katzowitz is huge into, advocating, the flag football leagues that they have in the Tampa Bay area. I think there was like somewhat 1,800 girls that they invited at the start of the season to the West Club. And, it's a growing sport like nobody else's, but, you know, Steve made a good point too. He's like, we're about a generation away. And he said, you know, when my girls started playing and he goes, and I ended up coaching them, he goes, I totally like rediscovered just the love of the game. You know, when you're in the NFL, there's so many things competing for your, you know, sort of your time and energy. And he goes, they were excited to learn. They, you know, I was able to teach them the parts of the games that I hadn't thought about in a long time. And he just loved it. But the one thing he made a point of, he's like, look, you know, right now we're just starting with, you know, flag football for girls. And there are some colleges from Division III on up, but not many that offer scholarships and things like that. But his point to us when we were talking to him tonight was we need to be into this flag football, especially for girls, to the point where women coach the teams. You know, like it just makes sense that as more girls play the game, and maybe their careers are over if they go to college and, you know, they're trying to open that avenue up as much as they can throughout the country. But maybe when they're done, they're the ones that have the passion for the game, decide to coach it, which would be a good thing, right? More women in football, mm-hmm. and especially in flag. So good to see him. Troy Aikman was here. A lot of the broadcasters are here. Mike Tirico, how you doing, Mike? Good to see you, man.
Was Tom Brady there, the new broadcaster?
He wasn't. And you know what? That to me, I think that would have been a great appearance for him because there's a lot of his colleagues, right? from Joe Buck, like I mentioned, Mike Tirico, all those guys. And this is his first year. And I know he's done the work in the dungeon and the, you know, sort of the taping yourself and all that, audition tapes and whatnot. But I think it would have been neat for him to, like, be among the owners, you know, be among the other broadcasters, be able to walk around the room. And
but would he go as a broadcaster or an owner?
That I don't know. It's a great point. And maybe, I don't know that they voted on that yet. So maybe that factors in somehow, some way. I'm not really sure. But he certainly would have been welcome to that group. And yeah, it's just fun to hang out. Like, you know, where are you going to go? And I love my job. I know it's hard work and all that. But, like, where are you going to go where every general manager, every head coach, every owner, right, are all within, you know, the proximity of a, you know, a beautiful lawn outside of the Ritz-Carlton. I mean, it's like it's not very large, but everybody was there. And so that's sort of like the great thing about these meetings is that you literally can bump into or intentionally, you know, try to talk to a lot of movers and shakers in the league. And, you know, it's enjoyable. It was really fun. And guys that we haven't seen for a while, didn't get to see Raheem, which was disappointing. Apparently he and some other Falcons, I think, went out to dinner and whatnot before the party. But by the time we left, they had not showed up. So still waiting to see him. But, yeah, just a great, great event at the Ritz-Carlton. We can't afford to stay here anymore. Like, back in the day, they used to have what they called media rates. And so they would send them around and go, here's the code. And you call the hotel and you give them the code. And then you get, you know, you may stay at the JW for $250. Or you may even stay at, you know, the Ritz-Carlton for $300 or something. Not anymore, man. Those days are long gone. I looked up the other day, I think, what the cost of just the JW Marriott this week. It was like $1,100 a room. I was like, wow. And a week earlier, it was in the twos, I think. But they're getting it, so God bless them. All right, we got a couple of mailbag questions coming up. But first, I wanted to address sort of, you know, Shohei Ohtani and the statement, or I guess a prepared script that his another, not the interpreter in question, but another interpreter read. By the way, without any reporters asking questions, or even in the room where it happened, you know. Nonetheless, Shohei gave a statement. It was fairly simplistic, you know, in its content. And to put a bow on it and just kind of summarize, it was like, wasn't me. You know, it's kind of like, I had nothing to do with nothing. I don't know anything.
He's Shaggy?
Yeah.
It wasn't me?
Wasn't me. Yeah. You talking about Scooby-Doo, or are you talking about, wasn't me the song. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, wasn't me. That's exactly what he said in so many Japanese words that were translated by yet another translator. But it was like, I didn't place any bets. I've never been on baseball, much less any other sport. And I was robbed of all this money. And man, you know, and they also didn't allow any questions, nor did they have reporters in the room where he filmed it, which was odd. I don't know. And maybe nobody knows at this point. But man, it seems to me like when I don't have any money, so relative to somebody like Ohtani, but like at some point, don't you have to miss $4 million? Like, doesn't that?
Well, he deferred $650 million of a $700 million contract to like 20 years from now. Apparently, right. he doesn't need the money.
I know, but he's not. Well, he doesn't, but he's not also getting that money all at once to kind of plow through.
What I'm saying is, if he can defer that much, then you're not really missing what you don't have now.
That's true. That's all true. It is. These two things are now so diametrically different that I'm wondering, you know, at this point, if he even knew the guy, you know, that allegedly stole money from him, because the way it's working out, I don't necessarily think is in Ohtani's favor. I mean, what could he say other than I know nothing and let the chips fall where they may?
Well, baseball is opening an investigation at this point, which they have to do.
Yes, indeed.
And he's going to be able to play it while it's going on because he's not been accused of anything at this point.
Nope, not yet.
But, you know, if you're going to make a statement, you're going to say as little as possible because there's investigations going on.
Yeah.
And the bookies that were, or the betting operation that was being paid is under investigation as well. So there's all kinds of tentacles to this that, you know, Ohtani, even if he wanted to say something, shouldn't, couldn't, and his lawyers would say don't.
Exactly, because it's an active investigation, and what you say is just going to be used against you. But there's already been, you know, mixed messages all over the place. Just based on videotape of their interaction, you know, like this is not necessarily an adversarial relationship. It turned out that way for obvious reasons, but it certainly didn't begin that way. So I don't know. I'm sad for Ohtani because I don't know that this is going to end well. I guess a lot of it just depends on who did what when, but man, what a great baseball player, you know, and this is nowhere relatable in any stretch in terms of what Ohtani is accused of doing and what Wander is accused of doing. But you take the best player off your team, any team, and somebody who has a little bit of special to him, you know, that's just hard to recover from, man.
It is. And although at this point, they're not taking him off that team.
They're not yet. No, they won't.
And I mean, it can be a distraction. It can be annoying.
It's going to be all, be, you know, but they're not going to remove anybody, and it'll be, there'll be due process. And, you know, at the end of the day, we'll see what his interpreter says and what he agrees to and what he admits to and all of that. But the just sort of the kind of clumsy rollout of an absolute denial, I don't know. It doesn't sit well with me. And I hope, and I actually pray that he's not involved in any kind of gambling, much less baseball gambling. And I suppose somebody, you know, if you have as much money as he does, and you trust the individual, maybe, you know, maybe they were able to place bets on their own behalf and things like that. But such an uncomfortable feeling to have somebody like him in the crosshairs or something like this. It's horrible. And yet here we are. We'll find out, you know, down the road, like you said, MLB will investigate, others will too. And you kind of hope for the sake of baseball, if nothing else, that Ohtani is cleared and, you know, he's going to continue his career. I wonder if this, because it's undecided, at least in terms of the investigation and things, I wonder, Steve, if this will weigh on him while he goes about his job. Or can he compartmentalize it and just, I'm just playing baseball?
Well, that's a good question. Although, you know, it may help a little bit that he's only focusing on one part of gameplay this year. I mean, he's
good
starting
point.
The rehab
yes,
process.
Yes,
he is
yes.
starting to light toss now, and he did that after his statement today.
Right,
as
right.
He's coming back from Tommy John, but he's not going to pitch this year.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So he's only going to hit, and most of it's a DH. So you're not, you know, you're not playing the field and such.
You're not playing outfield, yeah.
So, you know, I'm not saying it's going to be easy for him or he, you know, can or can't, but he's not doing what he did last year, which was, you know, being an all-star Cy Young possible pitcher and an MVP candidate at the plate. Like, he's not going to do both of those this year.
No, and that's because of his injury. So that might actually come out and sort of help him, but it's just disappointing. I mean, you know, like I was even thinking about like Wander Franco, like how we get here, man. You know, there's two of the best players in Major League Baseball, and they're somehow they're both sort of in hot water. I don't know. We could do a whole gambling show and why I think that's bad for every sport, but that comes in another time.
But now you're seeing there's a Toronto Raptors center that was pulled from a game because of irregularities with prop bets around him.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, you're going to start seeing more and more of this stuff now.
Yeah. Well, the New York Times had a story, and I don't know if you saw it, that, you know, 3 days before Tom Brady announced he was coming out of retirement, there was an unusually amount of activity, $10,000 and $20,000 bets on the Bucks making or winning the Super Bowl. You know, so, like, how did they know? There's inside information, like 3 days before he decides he's coming back and he's not going to retire.
And well, but he's probably told a few people in the inner circle, and that.
I would think so. What they
capitalized, or they told someone to capitalize.
Absolutely. And what they said is like the amount of money, because it was so, you know, 10 to 20 grand, it's like, these are not your normal ham and eggers, right? These aren't guys just, you know, sort of showing up and, you know, you're talking about wise guys. You're talking about people in Vegas, and it's just a bad look altogether, you know, the insider stuff. And that's, you know, how do you go place a bet for $20,000 at 60 to 1 unless you have some information that he's coming back? I just don't even know how you begin to do that. So there's a lot to answer for. I think that, you know, it was for a while concussions. It was injury. You know, we went through the whole protocols and different things, and, you know, we're still learning about stuff. And now, Steve, I think the train that the NFL is ignoring coming down the tracks might be all these gambling. It might well be gambling, because
I don't think they're ignoring it. I mean, you've seen what, you know, Calvin Ridley suspended and other players.
Right. They're trying to split in hairs. Like, they want their cake and eat it too. Like, on the one hand, they're partners with FanDuel or whatever. And on the other hand, it's like, oh, no. You can't use your app to bet on name the sport besides baseball. You know, like, there is this sort of embracing it with one hand and slapping.
They allow the players to bet on other sports. You can't bet on football.
Correct.
You just can't bet at the facility.
At the facility. And that's hard to, that's probably hard to monitor, frankly.
No, it's not. That's what GPS on your phone does. Those apps know exactly where you're at when you're placing that bet.
Well, and that, you know,
and they have to. They have to, because of some states allow it, some don't. Like, those apps won't allow you to place a bet if they don't know where you're at.
Yeah, that's true. That's the thing I think people forget, is that, you know, you're being, you know, for lack of a better term, like, you're being followed. Like, they're following, you know, there's a footprint. There's, you know, a way electronically to know everything that goes on. And that's the thing I'm going to be interested in. And when they get further down this Ohtani thing, is like, what will investigators uncover? You know, what will they know? And when will they know it? But it's just a shame. I mean, I think of Franco, what's going on there, and it's horrible. And then you think of Ohtani, it's like, man, if this guy, you know, somehow is complicit in anything, and it takes him off the field. It's just what a terrible situation for baseball. And you hope it doesn't come to that. But, you know, in the beginning, even not long after the news broke, him and his interpreter were sitting together, laughing, all that stuff. And now, of course, you know, he's sort of going after him, but we'll see. It's just, it's a bad baseball story. And I hate that it's at the start of the season, and, you know, there's, of course, they played the games in South Korea and that, but it's just unfortunate.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
All right, we got a little bit of time for some mailbag questions. Let's hit those and go.
All right, Robbie emailed you. Says you were listing future Hall of Famers on that 2020 Bucks team.
Yeah.
I think definitely Ndamukong Suh and maybe JPP have legitimate quals to make it to the Hall of Fame as well.
Suh is for sure, I think, a Pro Football Hall of Famer. And the impressive thing about him is the man, I don't believe, ever missed a game. And that's saying something in his career. I think he made all the starts, and, you know, he was a disruptive force inside. There are probably some that may not vote for him because of the extracurricular stuff. You know, at times he was perceived to be a dirty player and whatnot.
But he was early in his career.
Yeah, he stomped on a guy and all that stuff. But he grew up and he grew out of that. And all I know is, you know, he was, you know, just such a big part of the Bucks. and them winning a Super Bowl. You know, I don't know and the leadership and, you know, the play inside, obviously. I mean, he's a guy you had to account for with two blockers on every single play. I don't know that they win it without him. And I was a big Gerald McCoy guy, and I would have loved to seen G-Mac stay here and win a Super Bowl. I think he could have. But Sue was a different cat, and he brought guys with him. You know what I mean? He was that dude. And so they're both worthy. He wants to compare him, Sue, with.
We also said JPP maybe has a shot.
JPP is going to be tougher just in terms of pure numbers. Like when you get to the point of voting for the Hall of Fame, they're going to compare you with the guys that are already there. And I don't know that he has the sack numbers. I haven't looked up his career total yet, but my guess is that he didn't achieve that. And then you look at, okay, how many Pro Bowls? He made a couple. Is he an all-decade player? I don't think that he is.
JPP has 94 sacks.
Which, you know, you get around the 100 mark. There are guys in the Hall of Fame that are there probably with less than he had. Decently long career, overcame a hell of a lot. But Super Bowl champion sticks out. That's going to help him. I think it's, if he gets in, he's one of these guys that's going to take time.
Two-time Super Bowl champ.
Yeah, that's right. Giants and the Bucks. And that'll be in his favor. It really will, because he was a major player. If Bruce Arians does a presentation, he's in. Bruce Arians, and I've talked to him about this several times, thinks that the fire that JPP brought and the perspective that he brought, but that's what got the Bucks, you know, sort of over the top. And I don't know that I totally disagree with him. I remember seeing him in games after games where they had lost, and you didn't want to be around the dude. I mean, like, he'd call out anybody. So he drove those guys and had a hell of a career. It's interesting. I like I said, I think with JPP, you'll have to get further away from his career. With Sue, to me, I don't know if he's first ballot, but he's pretty close. You know, for all that he did in Detroit and in Tampa, did it the right way. Like, yeah, I think Sue for sure will be in the Hall.
Well, and Sue, granted, slightly different position, of course, but 71 and a half sacks in more games than JPP, 199
in more games. Yeah. Now, there's guys at a defensive tackle, Warren Sapp or John Randall and others that have had more career sacks than that. And so he'll always be measured by that. But just the eyeball test, I mean, I think eventually.
Yeah, looking at his career, he only played 8 games in Philadelphia in 2022, but I think he signed and played the last 8.
Yeah,
that sounds about right. And then in 2011, he only played 14 for Detroit, his second season.
Yeah.
But other than that, he played every game.
He played every game, and so he's
got basically some. I think he missed 2 that year in 2011. That's it,
right? No, it's a good resume. It really is, and like I said, these decisions are always made down the road sometimes, and there's cues and pecking orders and all of that. But those are two really good ones. I don't know that JP has quite the numbers, but. You know, his toughness, what he represented. But Sue, for sure. I mean, I think Sue's in there.
All right. Biased fan emailed you.
Biased fan?
Yes.
I love it.
They say, Rick, there's a lot of Robert Hainsey hate, and I really don't understand it. We could use an upgrade at center, but the common opinion seems to be that we need an upgrade. Hainsey is not a liability, and my eyes say he is a starting center in the NFL. Is there something I'm missing?
No, I mean, he is by definition a starting center in the NFL. I think what you're missing and what the Bucks are missing, quite frankly, is a little bit of oomph. Like, Robert Hainsey is a tremendous talent in terms of, like, he gets the game, he understands the blocking, he can communicate very well. He does a lot of the, you know, sort of intangible things, I guess you'd say. But what he isn't is very physical, you know? Like, he just doesn't drive people off the ball. He's not that type of center. You got to give him help against certain looks and whatnot. So I'm not anti Robert Hainsey. I'm pro the next guy that comes. I mean, I think center is one of those positions that they could address in the draft fairly high. And it might be, you know, somebody that can play guard or center. We'll see. But I'm not down on Robert Hainsey. He's a, like I said, he's a student of the game. I think he works hard at his craft. But let's face it, like, you're the guy that the quarterback, you know, his feet are as close to yours as anybody on the field. And, you know, you better give that guy confidence somehow. And I'm not saying Hainsey doesn't. I just think there's another level, right? Whether Robert gets there or not, I think there's another level that the Bucs could use.
Sam had emailed you. Says, now that Shaq Barrett and his five sacks are gone and free agency has been picked over, how on earth are the Bucs going to manage a decent pass rush this fall? In my view, there are three edge rushers worthy of being picked in the first round of the draft, and it's hard to see any of them falling to number 26. Could Jason Light trade up, or could he surprise us with another shrewd JPP-like trade? Wouldn't you agree that generating pressure is the key to Bowles' entire defense? I'd feel a lot better about this group if Light adds a premium prospect or a reliable veteran.
I mean, that's the goal, right? I think their number one sort of need, if you were, would be, you know, an outside pass rusher. I mean, I think you got to replace Shaq Barrett somehow, some way. And, you know, Kalijah Kansey's coming on and Yaya Diaby and all of that. But you need more. And so from that standpoint, I mean, could they trade up? We can always trade up. You got to give up something to trade up. I think Jason Light has been fairly consistent in terms of his approach to offensive linemen outside of Worf's, where he did move up, and the guy's going to wear a gold jacket if he keeps playing, you know, a few more years. But I think you kind of got to kind of see how the draft falls, you know, and getting an outside pass rusher is the number one need, but it doesn't mean that you're going to take somebody who isn't rated as high as a player you're staring at. And they have other needs too. You know, you could say wide receiver is a need. You could say that, you know, interior offensive lineman is a need. You could say, you know, certainly pass rusher, outside linebacker. You could say corner is a need because they just, you know, traded away one of their top corners in Carlton Davis. And even though they have a lot of confidence in other guys, you cannot have enough of the guys at that position. How about the interior offensive line? Are you confident there? You know, could you use some help next to, you know, Kalijah Kansey and guys like that? Absolutely. So there's a lot of needs, and you just got to be careful you don't reach for a player based on need. Like everybody says, they got the best player that was staring at them on the board. And what it usually means is it's the best player at the position that they felt they had the biggest need. And that's, you know, picking where they are, what is it, like 26 or so? It's just really hard to pinpoint who's going to be there. And I'll say this, if you get that first pick right, and the Bucs have gotten it right a bunch of times, Tristan Wirfs being maybe the best example, it just seems like if you get the first one right, the rest of them fall into place. Like, you're not disappointed. And, you know, this is a team that does have, you know, positions that they could upgrade. And you want to do that in the draft. But I don't know that Jason is going to make – he's not been a guy that's mortgaged future drafts to get up spots, you know. And as far as trading for other players, that does happen on draft day. JPP is, you know, tremendous acquisition by Jason Light. I don't see them that way. I just see them being very, you know, true to their board and hoping that the draft falls to them the way they think it will, and they'll come out of there with a really good player, whatever need that is. And it, like I said, there's a lot of them you could consider. But I don't think you go into it saying we're going to move up, or we're going to, you know, let's see how the draft goes. You see how it's unfolding ahead of you. How many players do you have that you have first round grades on when you get to 20, when you get to 22, like, you know, and they start coming off the board. That's the biggest thing. I mean, I think Jason's done a good job of getting value, you know, wherever that position is. I mean, he understands, you know, the value of positions and all of that. And he's been very good also at finding offensive linemen. If you want to talk about them, you know, at D3 schools, you know, Ryan Jensen, Colorado Pueblo, you know, after he got him from the Ravens, and different ones. So I put a lot of faith in him. I just think it's so impossible at 26, or I think that's where they're drafting, 26, 27, and to know what you're going to be looking at. It's just really hard. So outside pass rusher would be nice, but I don't see them necessarily moving up that far unless it's a couple of picks. And they did that, you know, maybe the greatest pick they ever made under Jason Light. They did it with the 49ers and took Tristan Wirfs, you know. And I know that John Lynch liked him, you know, when they made the deal. But nonetheless, they had a guy in Brandon Ayuk they wanted, and, you know, it worked out terrific. And I think the Bucs got a Hall of Fame type talent, you know. So it can be done. It takes two to tango. But I don't know that you count on it. You know, I think you have to go into it as if you're going to have to make a pick right where you're at. All right, so the great thing is we get to talk to Todd Bowles at the NFC Coaches Breakfast this morning. Also, Jason Light's going to pay us a visit. And look forward to this, maybe a Q&A with the Bucs co-chairman Joel Glazer. That'll be always fun at the owners' meetings. And, yeah, we're so close. This is like baseball is – they've now – close the camp in Port Charlotte. They're going to play, what, a game in
yeah, they got a game at the spring training game at the Trop today, and then they'll nice. Have a workout day Wednesday and opening days here Thursday.
Here we go, man. Yeah, it's right there. And we'll see how they fare in a couple of tough two series that they got coming up, I guess, with what, the Blue Jays and
the Rangers.
The Rangers, which, you know. And then I get to see him play, I think I mentioned this, in Colorado, if it doesn't snow. They're going to be out there and you know, try to get healthy against the Rockies. So that'll be a lot of fun in about a week or so. So, yeah, lots going on. You can submit your mailbag questions. If you got more, happy to answer them for you 100% correctly or your money back. You send them to us at SportsDayTV. You reach me at NFL Stroud, or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.